time for another episode of the Rose Quinn Podcast. And we have an amazing, amazing guest. I say that all the time, like we and us, but it's really just me here, just Rose. Anyway, I have an amazing guest today for you. I'm so excited. It is the lovely dream agent, Carly Waters. She is with PS Literary Agency, and it was a dream come true to be able to interview her for you guys. So we're going to get to that later. You can skip all the rest of this if you just really want to get to that and hear her amazing advice. But please come back because I'm going to tell you about some cool books and this cool writing method that I found. So my favorite books of the episode, I kind of went back in time for this first one. The Midwife's Revolt by Jodi Daynard. And again, you know, me, I don't really pronounce things well. So this book was originally published in 2012, and I read it a few years ago, maybe even 4 years ago, but it's on my list of, like, books to talk about, because I remember being really entranced by it. So let me read you the blurb. On a dark night in 1775, Lizzie Boylston is awakened by the sound of cannons. From a hill south of Boston, she watches as fires burn in Charlestown in a battle that she soon discovers has claimed her husband's life. Alone in a new town, Lizzie grieves privately but takes comfort in her deepening friendship with Abigail Adams. Soon, word spreads of Lizzie's extraordinary midwifery and healing skills, and she begins to channel her grief into caring for those who need her. But when two traveling patriots are poisoned, Lily finds herself with far more complicated matters on her hands. She suspects a political plot intended to harm Abigail and her family. Determined to uncover the truth, Lizzie becomes entangled in a conspiracy that could not only destroy her livelihood and her chance at finding love again, but also lead to the downfall of a new nation. This is historical fiction for me, can be hit or miss. I don't know why. It's just, it really has to have a certain quality for me to be super interested in it and to make it all the way through. And this one definitely did. It is a long book. I remember that much. I read fast and it took me a little bit longer to read this one. But the story and the characters, everything is just so expertly woven together, and you care incredibly about these people and what's going on with them, and it's really beautifully written. So if you enjoy historical fiction and you're looking for something new to read, I would definitely recommend The Midwife's Revolt. The next book I want to talk about is completely different than that one. It's one that I love and I'm so excited for the next one in the series to come out. It's One of Us is Lying by Karen McManus. You know me, and I love all things YA and crime and murder and whodunit mysteries, and this is definitely one of those. Let me read the blurb for you. Pay close attention and you might solve this. On Monday afternoon, 5 students at Bayview High walk into detention. Bronwyn, the brain, is Yale-bound and never breaks a rule. Addie, the beauty, is the Addie, the beauty, is the picture-perfect homecoming princess. Nate, the criminal, is already on probation for dealing. Cooper, the athlete, is the all-star baseball pitcher. And Simon, the outcast, is the creator of Bayview High's notorious gossip app. Only, Simon never makes it out of that classroom. Before the end of detention, Simon's dead. And according to investigators, his death wasn't an accident. On Monday, he died. But on Tuesday, he'd planned to post juicy reveals about all 4 of his high-profile classmates, which makes all 4 of them suspects in his murder. Or are they the perfect patsies for a killer who's still on the loose? Everyone has secrets, right? What really matters is how far you would go to protect them. So I'm a sucker for a whodunit mystery like this, and kind of like a locked room, like they were all in, you know, in there, and somebody had to have done it, right? You find something out about the 4 high-profile classmates who all have a big juicy reveal coming about them that, you know, I'm sure tons of readers can relate to all or one or a couple of the characters, which just really makes this real. Obviously, it's dramatized. This probably doesn't happen to people in their everyday high school lives, but it's there's aspects of these characters that we can all relate to and understand, and high school's hard and terrible for a lot of people, and this is a really well done, intriguing, and captivating novel. So if you like all of those things, I definitely recommend it. And there's a second one coming out that's One of Us is Next. So Karen McManus wrote another book in between these two, but that's called Two Can Keep a Secret, which I have sitting on a large pile of books. But the next one in this series is One of Us is Next. And that one comes out at the beginning of next year. So you still got time. Even if you have a long to be read pile like I do, you still have time to read it. So those are my favorite books of this episode. If you've noticed, I've started to do episodes more regularly. I've had some things going on in my life that have caused me to slow down a little bit, but I'm getting back on track. I have a lot of great guests for you for through the end of this year, and I'm so excited. We're going to be doing like alternating author agent podcasts. So that'll be super fun. So we'll get to hear from a lot of different agents and authors, and it's going to be awesome. But one thing I wanted to share with you guys that actually Kim Chance, who's an awesome author who has a book, Seeker, coming out. It's her sequel, coming out in September. Go check her out. She shared something on her Instagram stories that led me to Lisa Maxwell, who is also an author. She shared this really interesting way she writes goals or sets goals for herself that helps her in her writing. So I tweeted about it. You can go look. It's like the picture with all the little squares and the numbers and all the goals on the side. But what each square represents, you can also check this out on Lisa Maxwell's Instagram. She explains it too, but for those people who just want to hear about it right now. Each square is like a time frame. So you could do 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Each square for me is 10 minutes because my children can't let me go more than 10 minutes without needing something or asking a question. So 10 minutes is usually how long I can get in like a single sitting. Sometimes not even 10 minutes, but once you've hit the end of that 10 minutes, you write how many words you wrote in that time frame in the box, and then you keep going. And you know, you could probably, depending on your writing time or however you have it, you know, you could do 4 boxes on a line and then stop, or 3 or 2 or whatever. I did 3, so I did, you know, 3 bouts of 10 minute writing, and then on the right hand side you write your total word count. And the whole thing about it is setting small, realistic goals for yourself. So instead of being like, I am not going to finish until I reach 5K for today, I started at 500 words because my goal for each day is a little over 1,000. But you could set, you know, 1K, 2K, 3K, 4K, 5K. And then as you hit each goal, you're like, okay, making progress. It's the idea, I think, of starting small first, and then, you know, as you get into it, when you hit that bigger goal, even if you don't hit the bigger goal, then you're still like, oh, well, I still did a lot today. So that's something that really helped me get a lot of words, even when my kids were being ridiculous and being loud. Like the day I wrote almost 2,700 words, my kids were literally like at my feet screaming like banshees, playing Barbies, being crazy. So still possible. I didn't know I could be so successful doing stay-at-home mom stuff. My first week of stay-at-home mom stuff, I tried to write before they woke up and would do it, you know, after my husband got home or before I went to bed, which wasn't really successful because you're tired and exhausted after a long day with kids, but this was helpful. Even just if I only did a couple squares, you know, 20 minutes, at least I'm getting some words in instead of nothing. So, Now for the main event, which I know everybody is so excited about. Carly Waters, I first connected with her when I interviewed Andrea Dunlop for the podcast in 2017. I think I interviewed her the first year, or maybe early 2018, but Carly Waters is her agent, and I was like, oh yeah, let's connect with all the agents, and I've just kind of silently followed her on Instagram until I got the guts to start doing agent podcasts. So she is at PS Literary Agency, and she's wonderful, very well-spoken, and just gives a lot of great feedback and information on her experience in the industry, and you know, she answers those same questions about queries that Devin did in the last interview. So you'll get a different agent's perspective, and I think the thing to take away from it, and like she will mention her views on query no-nos or things that'll make her stop reading or favorite things to see in a query, you know, are personal. But I think it's good to hear from agents and for aspiring authors who get all of those emails that are like, it just wasn't a right fit for me. You see that there's still real people behind it that, you know, love books too and want to support authors and all of that. So I'm excited for this second agent podcast, and let's go ahead and get to know Carly Waters. So, Carly, can you tell us what drew you to publishing and being a literary agent and kind of your journey thus far?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a kind of a classic start. I was an English grad for my undergrad program, just kind of searching for ideas about what career I wanted to have. I started off in a teaching program, a concurrent education, so I was doing my undergrad at the same time I was doing some teacher's college. And after some teaching placements, I really didn't think it was my calling, which was disappointing because that's kind of what I was counting on as an English grad. So I thought, what is it that I actually want to do? You know, what is it that I actually loved about being in the English program? And for me, it was really just, you know, the books themselves. You know, I liked studying them and reading them. And so I just didn't really know how to translate that into a career. But I started to kind of unpack the whole concept of how do these books actually show up on the shelves? Because I think for a lot of people, it's very assumed that, you know, books just appear. But you know, there's this whole industry behind them and how they actually make their way to the bookstores. So, you know, there's a whole industry and there's so many careers behind it, which, you know, led me to the rabbit hole of, you know, how am I going to get into this business? So I started researching some post-grad programs about how to get into the publishing business. And there's some different opportunities. So obviously some people go right from their undergrad right into a different internship, you know, opportunity. For me, I wanted to get some sort of post-grad education, so I started looking into master's programs, different kind of certificate programs, and I landed on a program in the UK, in London, called City University. It was a one-year master's program, and it had a built-in internship into it. So for me, that was kind of great because I could get the hands-on experience that I needed, get my master's degree, move to a foreign city.
Yeah.
In 1 year, kind of cross a bunch of things off the list. So, yeah, so I started thinking about, you know, what different types of publishing careers it could be. And as soon as I landed on an agent, I definitely thought that was the best part of the business. You know, I think for a lot of people, this is, you know, a great thing. But for me, I just didn't want to be siloed into one department. I liked that agents were able to do so many things. You get to discover the writers and help them put together the ideas and the package and sell it and all the different rights, you know, being strategic about their career moves, helping with marketing and publicity. And so for me, it was just a way to exercise a lot of creative muscles. It just seemed like the dream job to me.
I definitely think it's a dream job, and you're definitely in a very important role as somebody who's an aspiring author. You know, literary agents are up there on our list of people we need to get to.
Yeah, and we're normal people, so don't hold us too high on a pedestal.
No, I think that's what I love about these interviews, too, is I sort of had a fear when I was reaching out to agents. I was like, what if they're like, no, never. But I was like, no, they're normal people. They love books, too. Like, of course they're going to be excited just to talk about it. saying it's good.
Yeah, and that's how our job happens. You know, like, I'm not the creator. I rely on all of these wonderful creators to supply me with the projects to sell, because I don't have a career unless I have writers on my roster. So yes, I'm very respectful of the process of the writers that, you know, hand over their thoughts to me.
I love it. Well, that's awesome. I'm so glad you found your path. I toyed with wanting to be a teacher for a while too, but I have a best friend who's a teacher of seventh graders. She teaches math, and I know that I could never do it. I don't have enough patience for that.
No, I know. And I think, I mean, because I was somebody who, you know, a lot of people are kind of nerdy in this business. So I'm somebody that was, you know, a pretty nerdy kid. And I just thought that you're going back to school as a teacher, you know, you're going to be going back and teaching all the nerdy kids like you. But, you know, sometimes it's babysitting. Sometimes it's remedial work. So, you know, it's not always, you know, teaching Shakespeare to 12th graders.
Yes, definitely not. So let's talk about your love for books. So you majored in English, and how was your love of books before that? How did it begin?
So for me, it just started with my mom. I think she was a librarian for her career, so that was something that was pretty built into, you know, my identity, you know, mm-hmm. the thing that we would do as a family, you know, go to the library, take out our books. And so it was a very, very early, I don't know, just passion of mine. I mean, I was somebody that would, you know, ask, you know, what is the maximum amount of books that I can take from the library and
yes.
stuff them all in my bag and go home with them. So it was something where it was never a question. It was never, you know, something that I had to kind of take on board as an identity. It was just something that was just always a part of me. And I've loved books from the beginning.
I love that. I have vivid memories of taking the train downtown Portland with like 15 books in my bag that I had to return before I could get any more books. You know, I was definitely the same way. I always had a stack of library books around.
And I never wanted to lose them. I didn't want to disappoint the librarian, so I had to like keep them all in the same place in my room.
Yes, definitely. So let's talk about the fun stuff real quick. Let's talk about queries. So I've got a few questions on them, but I want to start by asking you what your thoughts are on queries sticking to that specified formula. So not each agency's submission guidelines, but, you know, just including, you know, the introduction, the who, what, stakes, and not being gimmicky with it or trying to, you know, because you see those things out there where people try and to be a little creative and break free from the rules. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, because I totally understand as creative individuals how you want to step outside the box, but
yes.
I honestly believe that the rules need to be followed. And for me, it's just not cute to break them, because this is your first kind of business relationship, you know, one of the closest business relationships you're going to have. So for me, you know, it's like a cover letter for a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, we read like hundreds of them at a time, usually, like, you know, in one sitting, I'm reading hundreds, or, you know, we're getting thousands a month. So
crazy.
For me, like, if you're trying to be too cute and trying to divert too much, it's hard for me to know what your book is about.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just don't want writers to make it harder on themselves. So I do believe it in the process and the formula.
I think that's good to hear. I think writers try and help each other out and critique queries a lot, which can be helpful. I think it can also go the opposite way at times if you're not careful. But I think I have seen a lot of those where, you know, people are trying to break the rules to stand out in a different way, but that it could backfire for doing so.
I mean, the only way to stand out is to write a really great book. I mean,
yes.
You know, everybody's trying to do the same thing, but, you know, the really great books stand out. And so if you just bury the lead and bury the query and all this other, you know, words, then it's hard for me to find that great project. So definitely make it easy on yourself and follow the rules.
Perfect. That's good to know. What for you, in your experience of reading lots and lots and lots of queries, is your number one query no-no?
For me personally, and obviously, you know, we could talk for hours about how subjective, you know, reading queries is and,
yes.
and our personalities and our taste. But for me, I don't like queries that are too long.
Okay.
I've, you know, I feel that, you know, as a writer, you need to be able to summarize your thoughts. You know, you need to be able to condense them, and you need to be able to pitch your project. And it's not really fun. It's not always very comfortable to think of yourself as a salesperson, but right. you really have to be that first advocate for your book. And, you know, you have to be the person that's going to sell it to me, you know, the first person that can also, as I said, help you in this process. So if it's too long, I think, okay, maybe this person doesn't know what their book is about, or mm-hmm. they don't know what the selling features are of this project, or they don't know what the comp titles are, or they're just not aware of, you know, the market, and as we said, you know, the rules of querying. So I get quite put off by very long queries. I just don't feel like the writers are kind of understanding exactly what we need from them, and I just don't see them as being prepared for the industry.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as someone who has written queries and really struggled with them, I think that queries can first be, if you're struggling with that, trying to condense what really needs to be in there, that can kind of sometimes give you a clue that there's something wrong with your manuscript, but also it's making sure you're not like spoiling everything. You really are trying to keep it to, you know, that first act and just try and get the agent to be interested in reading the story, but not give them a synopsis. And I think sometimes that's a struggle too. You know everything as a writer in your head of what happens, mm-hmm. but you have to stop yourself from giving it all away.
Exactly. And it should read like back cover copy. So, yeah. you know, what you imagine the eventual back cover copy of your book to be. It should be salesy. And I also feel like writers, you know, just they feel like this is their one opportunity to, you know, communicate and speak to an agent. So they feel like they have to lay it all out. You know, yeah. I don't need you to lay it all out for me. If I like your book and I like your concept, you know, we're going to have a phone call and, you know, we're going to build a relationship and a rapport. So, you know, you don't have to use that one query letter as the opportunity just to bear all, you know, the purpose is to hook us on this one book project. And that's where it all starts.
That's great. Good advice for sure. Something to remember. Another thing to remember about queries. So what things in a query or first pages that you get will make you stop reading?
It's a tough question again, so personal, but for me, you know, I have pretty kind of commercial to market taste. So for me, I'm always thinking, you know, the consumer and the reader, they have so many things to distract themselves. There's social media, there's Netflix, there's magazines, you know, there's just so many things to take us away from reading.
Yes.
That, you know, we don't need barriers to get into books. And so I really feel like things need to be really high stakes, you know, lot of momentum. So if something is kind of lacking a crisis or a critical moment, or, you know, the pace is off, it's just, that's an opportunity for me to put the book down. And so I don't want the consumer to have that same opportunity to put the book down. So, you know, it has to be powerful. You know, it has to be exciting at the end of prose from page one, because you have to get me invested in the idea that I want to spend 8 hours with you in these words.
For sure.
So that's really the important thing for me, is just making sure that pace is there, the urgency and the stakes are there, because, you know, we have to compete with a lot of things.
So many things, social media and Twitter and all, and just our normal day-to-day lives and kids.
Exactly.
Lots of things that can make you, you know, put the book down.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a lot of leisure time anymore, right?
No.
So if you want somebody to spend their leisure time with you, you're asking a lot of somebody, really. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are only going to read one book a year, or, you know, they're going to listen to an audiobook. You know, there's all these different types of readers out there, but what they all want is something that is going to compel them and be escapist and take them away from their life and be entertaining.
For sure. I think that is what we all strive to do, but it can definitely be difficult to perfect your craft enough that you get to that point.
Exactly. A lot of self-editing.
Yes. Lots of self-editing. So let's talk about more on the flip side of it. What's your favorite things to see in a query? What makes you super excited?
For me, it's, you know, firstly that they get taste right. So it is something that I actually want to read. But
yeah.
Second, I really like when they get their comp titles accurate. So comp titles meaning, you know, the comparative titles that mm-hmm. you're kind of using to place your book within the marketplace. So if those are really spot on, if they're really relevant, they're really exciting to me in a way that's fresh as well. You know, those comp titles can really take things to the next level.
I think so too. I feel like I've seen a lot of conversation about comp titles lately on Twitter and just the importance of them. Do you feel like there's a time limit for what comp titles you can use? Like anything, you shouldn't use anything, you know, 2 years or older, or how do you feel about that?
That's a great question. So I usually advise people not to use things that are 5 years old or older.
Okay.
2 years feels like a little bit restrictive. I mean, I love it when they're super recent, but the other thing is, you know, books have to stand the test of time.
Yeah.
So that 5 year range just gives you, you know, a little bit of leeway in terms of, you know, what book within the past 5 years, and as opposed to, you know, just the past year or something like that. So I think anything past 10 years definitely feels too old. If you want to use a classic, that's fine, but don't use all classics.
Yeah.
You know, it could be one classic, or it's, you know, the classic meets this like super modern thing. That's also fine. If you want to use TV shows or films, that's also totally fine with me. Like if you just want to place it where it is in pop culture, that's totally fine. But yeah, it has to be something that sounds really smart and salesy. So you really have to think about how those comps are coming across. If they are, I also tell people not to pick something that's completely ubiquitous because it loses its sense of place and time. Because it, you know, if something becomes a huge franchise,
yeah,
it's not really a anymore, it's a pop culture moment.
Yeah.
So avoid those types of you know, huge projects that are no longer really books. You know, they're a cultural movement. So really, yeah, stick to books that are timely, and really shows your understanding of, you know, what's going on in the marketplace and what's selling. So, you know, you don't have to pick stuff that's all, you know, incredible bestsellers, but don't pick things that are too quiet either.
Yeah.
That nobody's heard of. So you kind of have to find that middle ground.
I think that's really good advice, and something that I feel like comp titles can be really difficult for people if they're not reading in their genre, reading what's out there, which I always say that you can't be a writer if you're not a reader too, because you have to be able to, I think reading is so crucial to being able to know what's doing well and the, you know, formulas that people are reading and loving, and especially for comp titles.
I also think it's an important part of being a literary citizen.
Yes.
I mean, just, you know, buying books and contributing to this industry, networking with other writers, you know, sharing what you're reading about on Twitter and social media, you know, finding ways to talk about the books and authors that you want to support. You know, it's just part of being a fan and being engaged in your business.
For sure. I think that's super important. Don't get lost in just the writing. The reading is the, you know, I think the reading is way more fun anyway, most of the time for me, so.
It's your escapism as well.
Yes, it definitely is. Always has been. So do you have any tips or golden rules that you want to share with authors who are currently querying or getting ready to query?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I would say focus on your top agent choices first. Sometimes I hear from writers, you know, should I hit all the heavy hitters in the first round, or should I save some? You know, I say don't save any top picks just because you're scared that the draft isn't ready.
Yeah.
You know, what if it is ready and you get all these offers and you never queried, you know, your dream agent? So I think that, you know, you kind of have to make tiers and kind of groupings of who you want to query, but stay pretty organized and stay really hopeful. On the flip side of it, I've also seen authors that kind of query and query and query, and then they get down to, you know, a list of agents that maybe they wouldn't accept an offer from, you know, if they were to offer, and that's just a waste of time. So, you know, for themselves. So, you know, if that doesn't end up being the book that lands you an agent, you need to think really hard about whether you want to go back and work on your next book or do a lot of careful research about, you know, the agents that you want to keep on that querying list. You know, don't just query and query and query, you know, just because you're distracted from, or, you know, scared about getting back to another book. You know, sometimes people have to query multiple books before they find an agent.
For sure.
So, you know, it's a long, long, long process. And, you know, I don't want to call it a game because it's your career and, you know, you should take it really seriously and really try to find the best business partner for you.
Yeah. I think that is definitely an important piece of it. I've had some conversations with other writers, and one of them was telling me he's going to query like batches of 50 agents at a time. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh no, don't do that. I'm like, you should learn about them and do it in smaller batches. I'm like, you want to be able to, you know, I think while you can't always have a personal note for each agent, you know, because if you haven't followed, you know, seen something on Twitter or, you know, met them at a conference or whatever, that's fine. But I definitely think putting in that research, because it is a business and, you know, you're it's kind of like an interview. You're starting, you know, that business relationship. You want to make sure you're putting your best foot forward for sure.
Yeah. And it's an interview both ways, right? Like, it has to be a fit for both people.
Yeah.
And just, I think that a lot of authors think that agents are in the position of power. You know, they're the ones making the decisions, but it's the authors that are in the position of power because, you know, they're querying these large groups of agents. You know, they get to choose who's the right fit for them. So don't forget, you know, who's in the power position there. It's the author who's selecting the right business manager for them.
Yeah. And I think what you said earlier about how, you know, you, the writer and the author brings you the work too. I think, you know, we need to think about it more in that instead of just like offering up our measly little work in progress or manuscript, you know, like, oh, please take me, you know, have some confidence and be like, no, this is what I did and you want it.
Exactly. You should be proud of the work you're putting out there or it's not ready to be put out there.
Exactly. Yes. So speaking of, you know, that business relationship, what else do you look for in an author? When you've gotten their query and the pages and you're interested and you're on that phone call?
For me, there's a short list of things. You know, I'm looking for things like, do they have enough ideas to have a long career? Because I don't want to work with someone who just wants to do one book. You know, we're going to get invested in this process and work together. And ultimately, we have to make sure that there's a lot of ideas to go around and, you know, many, many books to come. So that's one of the important things for me. Digital literacy is a big one. You know, just learning how to work the internet. I don't expect everybody to have a Twitter page and Facebook and, you know, every social media to ever be exist, you know, be in existence. But you do have to definitely know how to work a few of those key methods of communicating with your readership. And so even if it's just, you know, having a really simple website as a landing page and taking on one bit of social media, but, you know, even if you don't want to take it all on, it's just knowing how to work within those spaces. And that just, you know, tells me that the author is aware of, you know, what's going on in the marketplace and they know how to, you know, be the author that's going to move a lot of copies in today's environment. And that requires a lot of, you know, just a lot of research on their end. So there's that. I also think being kind of flexible, you know, not kind of trying to railroad the conversation, you know, that's a big thing.
Okay.
Also, just really just being supremely talented. You know, that's it. At the end of the day, I just want to work with people that are, you know, going to write amazing books. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, that's how I do my job best is I represent really great projects that are saleable.
I love it. Those are good things to keep in mind. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of emphasis that maybe just aspiring authors put on themselves about social media and having like this great platform and all that. But what I've heard from, you know, a lot of agents is that that's not crucial. That's not going to like kill you in the beginning if you don't have that. So that's good to know because I think a lot of people put a lot of stress on that before they, you know, have even started moving forward in the process.
Yeah, because there's no career unless there's a great book. So
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think those are all wonderful tips and things for people to remember. So let's talk a little bit right now about what you're looking for right now. So what's on your manuscript wish list?
Oh, goodness. So it's pretty timeless. I mean, for me, I'm always looking for family dramas. It doesn't have to necessarily be domestic suspense, but I'm looking for, you know, sweeping love stories or huge tragedies, historicals, something that, you know, just has a lot of really human elements to it. I like things like Commonwealth by Ann Patchett, type mm-hmm. of, you know, complex family stories. I also like really unique memoirs. I'm looking for some really great memoirs. I mean, there's been so many of the past couple of years, like Heartland and things like that. Just, you know, stories that haven't been told yet. I really feel passionately about bringing those into the world. I'm looking for, you know, lots of diversity. I'd love some great diverse rom-coms like Aisha at Last. I love that project. So things like that. And yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, the women's fiction upmarket, you know, book club space is where I feel most confident in what I like to read and what I like to sell. So anything that's new and fresh in that space.
Awesome. That sounds lovely. I'm sure there's lots of people out there who will are listening and are like, oh, yes, let me get on that website and hear you. So this is my favorite question to ask everybody, just as book lovers. I think it's always good to share what our favorite book is right now. So this is not your favorite book of all time. This is not anything like that, because that's a hard question to answer. Just what your favorite book is that you've read recently.
Well, I was just talking about on Instagram this week. The best book that I've read in probably almost this year is the one that I'm reading right now. So it's called The Most Fun We Ever Had by Claire Lombardo. It just came out in June, and I just started reading it. I was just in LA, and I picked it up for my flight, and I'm just obsessed with it. It's a really, really wonderful, going back to the whole family dramas thing, it's a really wonderful family drama about parents and four daughters.
Oh, wow.
And just how their lives take these really winding paths. So yeah, I'm quite obsessed with that, and I've been, you know, sobbing and laughing and telling everybody about it. So it's a very emotional read, and exactly the type of thing I love.
That's awesome. That sounds wonderful. Did you pick it up in the airport, or you just knew you were going to read it on your trip?
Well, I'd only brought one book on my trip, which is kind of shocking for me, and I finished it. So I was downtown in LA at the last bookstore, kind of, you know, browsing and checking it out, and I came across this book, and I'd seen it on a number of bookstagrammers' Instagram stories, just raving about it. So I just kind of picked it up on a whim, and I'm so glad I did. It kept me company the whole way home.
That's awesome. That's sometimes the best way to find a book. It's just on a whim. Just take a chance.
Yeah, it was worth it. I recommend it to everybody.
I love it. Well, Carly, thank you so much for chatting with me today and letting us pick your brain about some things for queries and the being a literary agent. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me and thinking of me for the podcast. If anybody wants to keep in touch online, it's at Carly Waters on Twitter and Instagram.
All right, guys, how amazing was that? Carly is a fountain of knowledge, and I'm so happy that she was on the podcast and able to share her wisdom with us. So I hope you learned something today. Please make sure to rate and review this podcast. I know it might not seem like a very big deal, but it can definitely help me and help more people learn about the podcast. Please share what you learned from this on Twitter or on Instagram with me and help get a conversation started so more people can listen to these agent podcasts and learn about the industry and the process, and connect with me at Rose Quinney, Quinny. I'll see you next time, or not see you, but you know what I mean.